Picture this. You're VFR, 4,500 feet, cruising toward a city you've wanted to see from the air for years. You've got approach control on the radio, you've been talking back and forth, they know you're there, you feel like you're doing everything right. Then 6 weeks later, you get a letter. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, and this is Radio Hangar. Today we're doing something every pilot needs to revisit at least once a year, no matter how much time is in your logbook. We're talking about Class Bravo airspace, not because it's exotic, because it is exactly the kind of airspace where a confident, well-meaning pilot makes a mistake that follows them for a long time. Before we dive in, quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the flying journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private Pilot Certificate, Instrument Rating, Commercial, ATP. They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that actually matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, Class Bravo. Let's start with why it exists. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, designed Class Bravo airspace to surround the busiest commercial airports in the country. We're talking about places like Atlanta Hartsfield-Jackson, Los Angeles International, Chicago O'Hare, Dallas-Fort Worth, airports handling hundreds of airline movements every hour, mixing in cargo jets, business aviation, and general aviation all in the same piece of sky. The FAA's goal with Class Bravo is to give controllers a defined chunk of airspace where they have positive control over every aircraft operating within it. Every single aircraft. Not most of them. All of them. That phrase, positive control, is doing a lot of work. It shapes every rule that applies inside the Bravo. Keep it in the back of your mind as we go. Now, the first thing students need to understand about Class Bravo is its shape. You've probably heard the phrase upside-down wedding cake, and it is honestly one of the more accurate descriptions in all of aviation. If you look at a sectional chart, you'll see solid blue lines surrounding the primary airport. Unlike the dashed blue circles of Class Delta, or the solid magenta of Class Charlie, Class Bravo uses solid blue lines, and they're stacked in layers. Each layer represents a different ring of airspace, with a different floor and ceiling. Reading those numbers on the sectional is straightforward once you know the system. You'll see fractions printed alongside each ring. The top number is the ceiling of that particular layer. The bottom number is the floor. So if you see 100/40, that slice of Class Bravo tops out at 10,000 feet mean sea level, and the floor is 4,000 feet mean sea level. Inside that ring, if you're anywhere between 4,000 and 10,000 feet, you're in the Bravo. Here is what a lot of students don't fully internalize until they sit with a sectional for a while. The floor of Class Bravo is not always the surface, near the primary airport. Yes, the Bravo usually comes all the way down to the surface. But as you get further out from the primary airport, those outer rings have higher floors, which means there is a band of airspace underneath the outer shelves of the Bravo where you can fly VFR without ever entering Class Bravo at all. As long as you stay below the floor of that particular shelf, let's say the outer ring of a particular Bravo has a floor of 3,000 feet MSL. If you're cruising at 2,500 feet, you are legal. You are below that shelf. You haven't entered the Bravo. But the moment you climb through 3,000 feet into that outer ring, you needed to have done certain things before you got there. That's where chart reading habits become everything. If you're planning a route that takes you near a Bravo airport, you need to know exactly where those floors are. Not approximately exactly. And you need to plan your altitude with a margin, not a razor's edge. Now let's talk about the rule that catches pilots the most often, the clearance requirement. Here's the thing about Class Bravo that is fundamentally different from Class Charlie. In Class Charlie airspace, which surrounds moderately busy airports, the requirement is two-way radio communication. You call approach, they acknowledge you by name, you've established two-way communication, and you can proceed. You don't need an explicit clearance. Two-way contact is enough. Class Bravo is different. Class Bravo requires an explicit clearance. You have to hear specific words from the controller that make it unambiguous. You have permission to enter that airspace. Phrases like cleared into the Bravo, or cleared through the Class Bravo, or enter the Bravo at your own navigation. Something explicit that grants you entry. Talking to approach control does not mean you're cleared into the Bravo. Being radar identified does not mean you're cleared into the Bravo. Getting a squawk code does not mean you're cleared into the Bravo. I want to say that again, because this is the mistake that generates violation letters. Talking to ATC, being radar identified, getting a squawk code, none of that is a Class Bravo clearance. You have to hear the explicit language. Here's a scenario that plays out in real life more than it should. A pilot calls approach Cessna 172, Niner Lima Tango, VFR 5520 miles northwest, request flight following. Approach responds, squawk code issued, check-in completed. Controller says, Cessna Niner Lima Tango, radar contact, altimeter 2 Niner 2. And the pilot thinks, great, I'm in the system, I'm talking to them, I'm all set. They are not all set. They have not received a Class Bravo clearance. If they continue inbound and penetrate the Bravo without hearing those clearance words, they've committed an airspace violation. What should that pilot have done? State the request early and clearly. Write in the initial call, request entry into the Class Bravo. Put it out front so the controller knows exactly what you need. Don't assume a clearance was implied by anything other than an explicit clearance. And if you're closing on the Bravo boundary and you haven't heard the words, ask Niner Lima Tango, request Bravo clearance. Sometimes controllers are busy and your intention to enter the Bravo got lost in the shuffle. Ask, clarify. Do not proceed on hope. The Airman Certification Standards makes this distinction very clear in the cross-country and airspace tasks. The examiner is looking for you to demonstrate that you understand the difference between a communication requirement and a clearance requirement. That difference matters on your practical test. And it matters every single time you fly near a major airport. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was still in training. When you're genuinely unsure whether you've been cleared, ask. Controllers are busy, but they are not unapproachable. A quick confirmation request takes 3 seconds and eliminates all ambiguity. Uncertainty about airspace is never a reason to just proceed. Clarify first, fly second. Now let's talk about the Mode C Veil, because this one surprises pilots even after they've been flying for years. The Mode C Veil is a 30 nautical mile ring centered on the primary airport in a Class Bravo area. Inside that ring, you must have a transponder with altitude encoding capability, what we call Mode C, operating at all times unless ATC tells you otherwise. Here is the kicker. The Mode C Veil is not the same as the Class Bravo airspace. The Bravo has its own defined boundaries, those upside-down wedding cake rings. The Mode C Veil is bigger. The outermost ring of the Class Bravo might only extend 20 miles from the airport, but the Mode C Veil goes out 30 miles. So there is a band of airspace from the edge of the Class Bravo out to 30 nautical miles where you have to have a Mode C transponder operating, even though you're nowhere near the actual Bravo. Why? Because controllers need to see your altitude even when you're outside the Bravo. Traffic sequencing, conflict detection, situational awareness for a very busy terminal environment. They want that altitude readout. The practical takeaway is this. If you are flying anywhere within 30 nautical miles of a major Bravo airport, your transponder needs to be on and in altitude mode. Check it before departure. If your home airport sits inside that 30-mile ring and your transponder is unserviceable, you've got a problem before you even start the engine. Plan accordingly. There is a provision for an ATC authorization to operate within the Mode C Veil without the equipment in certain circumstances. But this requires advanced coordination. You're not going to get it on the fly. Plan ahead or stay out. Now let's talk about what flying inside the Bravo actually looks like once you have that clearance. VFR weather minimums inside Class Bravo are 3 statute miles of visibility and clear of clouds, that's it. No specific distance above, below, or horizontally from clouds, just clear of clouds. This is actually less restrictive in terms of cloud clearance than Class Echo or Class Golf, where you need precise separation from clouds in all directions. The reason for the reduced cloud clearance requirement is that everyone inside Class Bravo is in contact with ATC. Controllers are providing separation. You're not primarily responsible for seeing and avoiding a Boeing 737 on your own, because the controller is keeping you apart. That's the whole point of positive control, but you still need 3 statute miles of visibility. If visibility drops below 3 miles, you cannot operate VFR in Class Bravo. Full stop. Speed limits. Below 10,000 feet MSL, the standard limit is 250 knots indicated airspeed. That applies everywhere below 10,000, including inside the Bravo. Additionally, within 4 nautical miles of the primary airport of a Class Charlie or Class Delta airport, below 2,500 feet AGL, the limit is 200 knots. For most general aviation pilots flying singles and light twins, you're nowhere near these numbers. But in a turboprop or a light jet, know your limits and know the airspace boundaries. The FAA publishes something called VFR flyway planning charts for the busiest Bravo airports in the country. These are separate from your standard sectional, and they are specifically designed to help VFR pilots navigate around and through the Bravo. They show recommended VFR routes, altitude corridors, and key landmarks. If you regularly fly near one of the big Bravo airports, download the flyway chart for that airport and study it. It's a tool the FAA built specifically for this situation, and too many pilots don't know it exists. you can find them through SkyVector or the FAA's Digital Products Catalog. Now, a word specifically for student pilots, because the rules are a little different for you, and your instructor needs to make sure you understand this before you go anywhere near a Bravo airport. Student pilots are not automatically permitted to fly solo in Class Bravo airspace. Your instructor has to provide a specific endorsement for solo operations in Class Bravo. This is separate from your general solo endorsement, and at certain high-density Bravo airports, the FAA maintains a specific list. Solo student pilot operations are prohibited entirely, even with an endorsement from your instructor. The FAA lists these airports in FAR Part 61, and they include places like LAX, JFK, O'Hare, and Hartsfield. You need to know whether your local Bravo is on that list before you ever consider a solo flight near it. If you're a student pilot and you're anywhere near a major Bravo airport, talk to your CFI. Don't assume your solo endorsement covers it. It probably doesn't. Let's talk pre-flight planning, because knowing the rules is one thing and actually applying them on a flight is something else. When you're planning a cross-country that takes you near a Class Bravo airport, pull up your sectional and identify the Bravo boundaries. Look at each ring and note the floors, determine your intended route and altitude, and figure out whether you're going to be inside any of those rings. If yes, plan to request a clearance early. Get it before you need it, not when you're already close to the boundary. If you want to route underneath the outer shelves, you can often do that by staying below their floors, but you need to know exactly where those floors are, and you need a real margin, not a hope and a prayer. 200 feet below the shelf floor is not a margin. 500 feet is a margin check. For NOTAMs related to the Bravo, the FAA occasionally issues temporary changes to Class Bravo structures, especially during major events, presidential visits, major sporting events, air shows near primary airports. The Bravo can have a NOTAM that changes its effective boundaries or closes certain sectors temporarily. Brief thoroughly and check for airspace NOTAMs, not just airport NOTAMs. And file a flight plan or request flight following when you're operating near a Bravo. You want to be known. You want to be in the system. If something goes wrong with communication, you want ATC to know your intentions and your route. Here's something worth knowing about how enforcement works when a Bravo violation does occur. The FAA takes unauthorized entries seriously because the entire system of positive control depends on everyone being where they're supposed to be. When a pilot busts the Bravo, even unintentionally, it creates workload. Controllers may have to maneuver other aircraft. In a busy terminal environment, that ripple effect is very real. If you ever find yourself inadvertently inside Class Bravo without a clearance, call ATC immediately. Tell them where you are and follow their instructions. The worst thing you can do is not tell them and try to quietly depart the airspace. Voluntary disclosure and cooperation matter significantly when the FAA reviews what happened. The FAA's compliance philosophy does distinguish between inadvertent mistakes by pilots with clean records versus intentional violations or patterns of unsafe behavior. That doesn't mean a Bravo bust is a minor thing, but a pilot who called ATC right away, cooperated fully, and had no prior violations will be treated very differently than someone who tried to hide it. Know the rules, fly the rules, and when you mess up, own it. That's not just legal advice, that's how pilots who want long careers in aviation handle their mistakes. I want to leave you with one thought. Airspace isn't just a regulatory burden. It's a system designed to keep a lot of very different aircraft from running into each other in very busy pieces of sky. When you understand why each rule exists, following it stops feeling like compliance and starts feeling like participation, you're part of something that actually works when everyone does their part. Today's segment drew on the Aeronautical Information Manual, FAR Part 91, and the Airman Certification Standards. Find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time on Traffic Pattern.